Our goal this morning will be to look at the first three chapters here in 2 Samuel. Let's begin this morning with a brief overview. Much of what we have studied over the last several chapters has obviously centered around Saul and David. The Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul for his disobedience. He didn't utterly wipe out Amalek. The Spirit of the Lord was with David. We read of that transition there of the Spirit leaving Saul and being with David in 1 Samuel chapter 16. As Samuel had said, the kingdom would be torn from Saul, just as Saul had torn the garment of Samuel. Saul relentlessly pursued the life of David. David was fleeing from city to city, from cave to cave, even into foreign lands, trying to find refuge and trying to find safety. We know all along that his true refuge was in who? God. And God provided him safety throughout all these various attempts that Saul made. David himself spared. He spared Saul on two occasions, where he had the opportunity to take Saul's life, but he wouldn't do it. Why? It was the Lord's anointed. He respected that position so much that he would not do it and carry that out. And we'll be discussing that a little bit more this morning. In 1 Samuel 25, we read of Samuel passing away, the last great judge of Israel passing away. We also have learned of David fleeing into the land of the Philistines again. This is the second occasion where David sought refuge in the land of the Philistines due to Saul's relentless pursuits. In 1 Samuel 27, verse 1, David said to himself, "Now I will perish one day by the hand of Saul. There is nothing better for me than to escape into the hand of the Philistines." Things were so bad that he had to go to the land of the Philistines to seek refuge again. And once he went there, Saul finally did give up his pursuit of David. While he was there in the land of the Philistines, he was blessed. If you remember, the king of Gath, his name is Achish, he gave David the city of Ziklag. He gave him a Philistine city while he was there. We also have read of Saul being greatly distressed because the Philistines had gathered together against him. Saul was inquiring of the Lord, seeking answers about what to do, and the Lord would not answer him, would not respond. Well, Samuel had passed away, and so Saul didn't know what to do now. So what did he decide to do? Summoned a medium. That's right. And asked this medium to conjure up or to bring up Samuel and to speak to him. And so Saul spoke to Samuel through a medium and learned that he and his son would perish. That's in 1 Samuel chapter 28, verses 16 through 19. Did that come to pass, that the next day they would perish? Yes. In chapters 29 and 30, as the Philistines prepared to battle Israel, the Philistines did not fully trust David. Although he was now with the Philistines, he was serving as the bodyguard of this king, they didn't trust him fully. And so they sent him back from the battle lines. And so David, when he returned back to Ziklag, found that it was burned. He found that Amalek had taken his wives, they had taken the people of the cities. And so he inquired of the Lord what he needed to do, if he needed to pursue Amalek. And the Lord said that he should. And so he went and he attacked the Amalekites. He recovered all that was taken. They called it David's spoil. And that's recorded for us in 1 Samuel chapter 30. In the final chapter that we studied at the end of class on Wednesday night, we read of the Philistines defeating Israel. And in this defeat, they suffered such great losses. Jonathan dies in this battle. Saul, the king of Israel, dies in this battle. And remember, he is wounded so badly by the archers that he is asking his armor bearer to kill him and to put death out of his misery. Would the armor bearer do it? Saul fell on his own sword, and then the armor-bearer did that himself. And so we read of this happening on Mount Gilboa, this great situation where Israel falls, just as was predicted by Samuel and spoken by Samuel. Now, on this map, we can point out a few things that I think are of importance. First of all, we have here is Ziklag. This is the city in Philistia that was given to David by Achish. This was the area that he went back to after he was sent from the battle lines, and he found it burned. So this is an important location here where David inquired of the Lord. He recovered his wives and all the things that had been stolen in 1 Samuel chapter 30. You can see Mount Gilboa is quite a bit farther north here. This is the mount where there is the showdown here between Israel and the Philistines. This is the mountain where Saul and Jonathan both perished in battle. And when the Philistines found Saul, they found his dead body there. They took his head off of him, and they sent it through the land of the Philistines to parade it around. They took the body of Saul and his sons, and they put it on a wall of Bethshan. Bethshan is not on this map, but Bethshan is really close to Mount Gilboa if you just go a little bit farther to the east, right beside the Jordan River there. That is where they hung their bodies as a public spectacle. The men of Jabesh-Gilead, if you remember, located on the other side of the Jordan River, bravely traveled to Bethshan and took the bodies of Saul and the sons of Saul off of the wall, and they buried them. And they buried them in Jabesh-Gilead. Much of our study today over the first three chapters of 2 Samuel really focus on two areas. You've got Hebron. This is the area where David will be anointed king. And also Gibeon. There is great warfare that occurs here in Gibeon. And this warfare is specifically between the servants of David and the servants of Saul's son, Ishbosheth. So you can kind of get a roundabout estimate of like some locations here and some situations that were happening. So we'll begin here in 2 Samuel chapter 1. And in 2 Samuel chapter 1, some of the things that we're going to be reading of is there is an Amalekite who comes back from the battle lines and tells David the result of the battle. And he's going to tell David, in his own words, I guess you could say, about Saul and Jonathan perishing on Mount Gilboa. We also will read of David punishing this Amalekite, that the words of this Amalekite testified against himself, and David carries out a punishment upon him in taking his life. And then David also, at the end of chapter 1, mourns greatly for the loss of Saul, for the loss of Jonathan, for the defeat that Israel had suffered. And there is this very sincere, strong lament that we read, that he wanted all of the people to also lament with him in sorrow for the loss of the king of Israel and for Jonathan. And so let's look at these first few verses here in chapter 1. Sorry, I'm clicking. Here we go. And at the beginning of 2 Samuel, we read of David receiving the news of Saul's death. David had returned from defeating the Amalekites in Ziklag, and a man came from the camp where Saul was. When this Amalekite showed up, his clothes were torn, he had dust on his head, and he came to David and prostrated himself, and David asked him in verse 3, "From where do you come?" And the man told him that he had escaped from the camp of Israel. David obviously desired to know the outcome of the battle. No one would have had a greater interest in knowing the outcome of the result of this battle than David. If you think about David, he had close ties and unique relationships across the board. From a tumultuous and difficult relationship with Saul, to Jonathan, who was like a brother to him, or closer to a brother to him, to even on the other side, did he have a relationship with some of the Philistines? Is the armor bearer, or you can see, not the armor bearer, but the bodyguard for King Achish. So you think about both sides. He knew these individuals. He really wanted to know what happened here in this battle because he had been sent back from the battle lines. So after being reluctantly sent away, David was anxious to know what had happened. In verse 4, David said, "How did things go? Please tell me." The man then said, "The people have fled from the battle, and also many of the people have fallen and are dead. And Saul and Jonathan, his sons." David then asked, "How do you know that Saul and his son Jonathan are dead?" Amalekite then told David that by chance he was at Mount Gilboa and witnessed Saul leaning on his spear. Saul was close to the Philistines. Saul then asked who he was, and he told him that he was an Amalekite. And in verse 9, the Amalekite recounted that Saul gave him instructions for him to kill him because he was in agony, because his life still lingered in him. The Amalekite said that he killed Saul because he knew he could not survive after he had fallen. If you look there in verse 10, the Amalekite said, "So I stood beside him and killed him, because I knew that he could not live after he had fallen. And I took the crown which was on his head and the bracelet which was on his arm, and I have brought them here to my Lord." It's ironic that an Amalekite, of all people, would claim to have killed Saul. Because what was Saul supposed to do? Kill all the Amalekites. It's also interesting, too, because what happened in verse 1? Where did David just come back from? Slaughtering the Amalekites. This is not setting up well for this Amalekite, right? And so you think about, was this account that you read of here accurate? Was the account of the Amalekite accurate as concerning what happened on Mount Gilboa with Saul? No, not at all. We have two different accounts of this. 1 Samuel 31 that we studied, also 1 Chronicles 10, 3 through 6. This account was not accurate. And so those give specific details about the death of Saul. This Amalekite was obviously lying. He was being deceitful. And he must have come to Saul after Saul had already committed suicide. He had already fallen on his sword. So why would the Amalekite lie? Prestige? That's right. And this is not the first time, the second time. This is going to happen. Well, I shouldn't say this isn't the last time this will happen. There are multiple men over the next several chapters who will think that they are killing someone to please David. And David is like, "That's not at all what I wanted, and you're going to have it brought upon your own head." And this is just one of these instances. We're going to have another instance of this here in the next couple chapters. So he was seeking the favor of David, possibly. And you do think maybe about, you know, on David's end, he was to be the next king, right? Wouldn't he rejoice to see Saul dead? Hadn't Saul been pursuing his life all these years? On paper, you might think this would add up, that David would be grateful for Saul being dead. But that's not true at all. David revered and respected Saul, even though it was never reciprocated back to him or rarely reciprocated back. And so you would think that surely Saul's passing would have been good news to David, but it was not at all. He didn't want to give this Amalekite a reward for what he had done. And the fact of the matter is he didn't even do it. He was lying about it. So some interesting things happening here. When David learned what had happened, he tore his clothes. This was a very typical reaction for great lamenting, great mourning that we read of, especially in the Old Testament. And he and the men with him, they mourned, they wept, they fasted for Saul, they fasted for Jonathan. They wept for the people of the Lord and the house of Israel because they had fallen by the sword. David was overcome with grief. David asked the young man where he was from. He said again, "I am the son of an alien, I am an Amalekite." David responded and said, this is in verse 14, "How is it that you were not afraid to stretch out your hand to destroy the Lord's anointed?" And then at that point, David called to one of his young men, and he said, "Go cut him down." And David's response was swift. It was firm. David, on two different occasions, had the opportunity to kill Saul himself, and he refused to do it because Saul was the Lord's anointed. And this individual was making up a story, being deceitful. David didn't know that. But he was saying that he had carried out the killing of the Lord's anointed. This was egregious to David. And on both occasions, David was unwilling to do it himself because of the respect for this position that the Lord had given Saul. When you read 1 Samuel 24:6 and you read 1 Samuel 26:9 through 11, David clearly understood the gravity, the severity of taking the life of Saul. He was unwilling to do it. But this Amalekite's own statements had revealed to David that he had no such respect for the Lord's anointed. David commanded the Amalekite to be put to death, and the young man carried out that command and killed him. In verse 16, David said, "Your blood is on your own head, for your mouth has testified against you, saying, 'I have killed the Lord's anointed.'" And again, this is not the last time we'll read of someone thinking that they're doing something that's pleasing in the eyes of David, only to lose their life for their foolish actions. At the end of chapter 1, we read of this great lament that David wrote, lamenting over Saul and Jonathan and their death. We read of a lament that David chanted. And in this mournful text, it's referred to as the Song of the Bow. Verse 18 states that this lament was to be taught to the sons of Judah to mourn over Saul and Jonathan. And there are some very interesting statements in this lament. If you look at verse 19, it reads, "Your beauty, O Israel, is slain on your high places. How have the mighty fallen?" If you think about the beauty of Israel, you think about Saul was a handsome man. He was head and shoulders taller than everyone when he was placed as king, chosen as king by the Lord. And Jonathan represented the very best of the men, the young men of Israel. It's a common refrain throughout the laments, "How the mighty have fallen." That's a line that's used repeatedly by David. Saul and Jonathan, were they mighty men? They were. They had brought about victories. They had fought. They had delivered Israel at repeated times during their lives over their enemies. In verse 20, we read, "Tell it not in Gath, proclaim it not in the streets of Ashkelon, or the daughters of the Philistines will rejoice. The daughters of the uncircumcised will exult." David desired for this news of Saul and Jonathan not to even reach the land of the Philistines. He didn't want the enemies to be rejoicing over these mighty men who had fallen. Verse 21 reads, "O mountains of Gilboa, let not dew or rain be on you, nor fields of offerings. For there the shield of the mighty was defiled. The shield of Saul was anointed," or not anointed, "with oil." This section right here in verse 21 references Mount Gilboa, the mountain where Saul and Jonathan fell and died. David desired for Mount Gilboa to be barren because it was the mount where these mighty men had fallen. Verse 21 reads, "From the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan did not turn back. The sword of Saul did not return empty." Here it proclaims the bravery of Saul and Jonathan in facing their enemies. The bow of Jonathan didn't turn back. The sword of Saul did not return empty. Verse 23, "Saul and Jonathan, beloved and pleasant in their life, and in their death they were not parted. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions." Was Jonathan beloved and pleasant in his life, especially toward David? Yes. Was Saul beloved and pleasant in his life toward David? Now, that's interesting. Would you all agree with that? But again, this really says something that I think has a very deep meaning. Saul disrespected David so greatly and sought the life of David over and over and over. And David refused to reciprocate that terrible, wicked behavior back. He showed him respect. And even in death, at this moment when he could be rejoicing that Saul has passed and that Saul has fallen slain, he refuses. Called him beloved and pleasant. And he did have moments where he was pleasant, but he had not been pleasant toward David, obviously, in these recent years. Does this teach us a lesson about how we need to treat our enemies? It really does. Like, that's humbling to think about in these moments when a person's treating you badly and mistreating you, maybe for days or years or whatever it may be, I don't need to have any part in reciprocating it. And David is impressive here in how he's not rejoicing over the death of Saul. He had the utmost respect for the Lord's anointed. Verse 24, "O daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you luxuriously in scarlet, who put ornaments of gold on your apparel." Obviously, during this time when Saul was king, there was some amount of blessings that the people enjoyed in him being king, that they had luxurious scarlet, ornaments of gold, and that they had prosperity under the reign of Saul. Verse 25, "How the mighty have fallen in the midst of battle. Jonathan is slain on your high places." Verse 26, "I am distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. You have been very pleasant to me. Your love to me was more wonderful than the love of women." These two verses display the personal and deep lamentation that David had specifically for his dearest friend. We read of the love that Jonathan had for David, how he loved him as himself in 1 Samuel 18. And they repeatedly made a covenant with each other, a covenant that would continue even to their descendants. David surely loved Jonathan, and hearing of his passing was incredibly difficult. The lament concludes in verse 27, "How have the mighty fallen and the weapons of war perished?" The news of Saul and Jonathan's death, the news of Israel falling to the Philistines, was just devastating to David. And he commanded that this be taught to the sons of Judah, that they would know this song and this lament. Do you have any comments or things you all would like to add? Uh-huh. Sherry? That's right. I think that's a great phrase. He didn't glory in it. And it's interesting, too, because so many of the Psalms you read of, David would pray very openly to the Lord to be delivered over his enemies and for his enemies at times to suffer, right? But he would not glory in it. That's right. That's a great way to phrase that.
Mm-hmm. Your comment made me think about the Sermon on the Mount, when Jesus says in Matthew 5, you know, when he's talking about, you heard it said, love your neighbor, but hate your enemy. And then he said, I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. So I think this would be a great example of David acting out that principle of, although Saul hated him, he didn't hate Saul, he prayed for him.
That's right. Jesus on the cross, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. That's right. Right.
He says he makes the sun to rise on the evil and the good.
That's right.
All good from God comes from God, but obviously in this case he's talking about, you know, how are you presenting yourselves? How is David presenting himself, even though Saul was trying to harm him for much of his later life, David didn't reciprocate.
That's right. David would act righteously.
So I thought it was a good time.
That's right. That's right. All right, let's look at chapter 2. In chapter 2, we read of David being anointed king of Judah. He's going to relocate to the city of Hebron. We also will learn of an individual named Ishbosheth. Ishbosheth was one of Saul's sons who did not die on Mount Gilboa in the battle with the Philistines. And Abner, Saul's commander, would make him king of Israel. And also we will be reading of a war that would begin between the men with Abner, which were obviously the servants of Ishbosheth, and then on the other side, Joab, which were the servants of David. And there would be much difficulty. You read of much bloodshed over these next couple chapters, especially between Abner and Joab, and some rise here and things that happen, and some decisions that are made. All right. In these first few verses of chapter 2, we read of David being anointed king of Judah. At the beginning of the second chapter, David inquires of the Lord, and he says, "Shall I go up to one of the cities of Judah?" And the Lord responded and said, "Go up." And David asked, "Where shall I go up?" And the Lord said, if you remember, David was located really in Ziklag at this point. Ziklag had just been burned with fire, and now Saul is dead. He doesn't have to fear for his life like he had been for the last several years, where he was on the run from place to place. So now David could return to Judah, and so he inquires of the Lord, where should he go? And the Lord says, go to Hebron. So David goes to Hebron with his two wives. At this point, his two wives are Ahinoam and Abigail. And the men with him travel with him. Their families also travel with him to Hebron. In verse 4, we read, then the men of Judah came, and there anointed David, king over the house of Judah. David was chosen by the Lord to be king of Israel. And Samuel had anointed David before his brothers all the way back in 1 Samuel 16. Well, at this point, David was of the tribe of Judah and had dwelt much of the time when he was running from place to place across this region of Judah. So here, David was anointed again, and confirmed in this case, king over the house of Judah. So that is the region where he had been chosen to be king. But we also learned that after he was anointed, the men of Jabesh-Gilead, this is an interesting point too, David blesses the men of Jabesh-Gilead because what had they done? They buried Saul. And it was a very brave thing they had done, to go and to take the body of Saul and his sons from the wall and to give them burial in Jabesh-Gilead. And so David hears of this, and so he blesses them. If you read there in verse 5, David sent messengers to the men of Jabesh-Gilead and said to them, "May you be blessed of the Lord, because you have shown this kindness to Saul your Lord and have buried him. Now may the Lord show loving kindness and truth to you, and I also will show this goodness to you, because you have done this thing. Now therefore, let your hands be strong and be valiant, for Saul your Lord is dead, and also the house of Judah has anointed me king over them." Now this is an interesting side note. I don't know how much this connects exactly, but was there any connection between Jabesh-Gilead and the tribe of Benjamin? Saul was of the tribe of Benjamin. Just any historical connection you think of between Benjamin and Jabesh-Gilead. We studied it in the book of Judges. Okay, we don't remember. It's all right. Judges 21. Jabesh-Gilead was the area that was attacked. If you remember, and they took 400 virgins from Jabesh-Gilead and presented them to the men of Benjamin when the tribe of Benjamin was almost wiped out. So there is an interesting side note connection. I don't know how much it plays into this, if that's why Jabesh-Gilead felt a deep connection that they wanted to go to take the bodies of these Benjamites and give them burial. But there is a connection between Jabesh-Gilead and Benjamin from that passage that we have, the text in Judges 21. In verse 5, David sent messengers to him. He blesses them for their kindness in burying Saul and burying these sons. All right. In verse 8, we read of Abner. Abner was Saul's longtime commander. And Abner decides that he's going to make Saul's son Ishbosheth king. Now, the area where Ishbosheth was made king, as stated here, was in Gilead, this is in verse 9, over the Asherites, over Jezreel, over Ephraim, over Benjamin, even over all Israel. So this is a pretty significant area where Ishbosheth would be reigning. Was Ishbosheth chosen by the Lord to be king? No. Ishbosheth was chosen by who? Abner, right. He was chosen by Abner. And we read that he was... He was 40 years old. He reigned for only 2 years. If you want to know what the name Ishbosheth means, it actually means man of shame. And it's interesting that we haven't heard of Ishbosheth at all until this point. The other sons of Saul, we know several of them perished on Mount Gilboa, but this is the first instance that we read of Ishbosheth. So we also read here that David was the king of the house of Judah. He was king in Hebron. And in verse 11, it tells us that he was king there for 7 years and 6 months. In verse 12, we read of an interesting contest that happened at Gibeon. Abner traveled from Mahanaim to Gibeon with the servants of Ishbosheth, and Joab and the servants of David went out to meet them at the pool of Gibeon. And what happened was, is at this pool of Gibeon, you had these two parties sitting on the two different sides of the pool. And Abner proposed a contest to Joab in verse 14, and he said, "Now let the young men arise and hold a contest before us." And Joab agreed and said, "Let them arise." And the contest involved 12 men on each side. And you would have 12 men representing Ishbosheth, Saul's son, and you would have 12 men representing the servants of David with Joab. And these men would grab each other by their heads, and they would thrust a sword into their sides. And they would go down together. Many of the depictions of this, if you look up images of this, in many cases, I was talking to Kenny about this before services, they would be grabbing their beard and pulling them into the sword. And this was a place called Helkath Hazarim. The meaning of this place that you read of there in verse 16 means field of the sword edges. So they're having this fierce battle, this fierce contest between these men. In verse 17, we read that the day that battle was very severe, and Abner and the men of Israel were beaten before the servants of David. There's this warfare now that breaks out among these two different groups, of Ishbosheth's servants and the servants of David. Abner leading Ishbosheth's servants, and then Joab leading David's servants. Do we have any comments or questions at this time? Okay, in verse 18, we read of Joab. Joab again. But we also read of Abishai and Asahel, who were the three sons of Zeruiah. In verse 18, it says, the three sons of Zeruiah were there, Joab and Abishai and Asahel. Does anyone know who Zeruiah, I can't even say the name, Zeruiah, who this was? It was actually David's sister. Upon a first read, you think this probably was a male. But this actually was David's sister. So what was the relation then between David to Joab? Joab was his nephew. That's right. And so Joab was his nephew, and then Abishai and Asahel. Asahel is going to be a main character in these next several verses. This was his nephew. And so one son who is specifically mentioned here quite a bit is Asahel. And what does Scripture tell us about Asahel? What was his amazing skill that he had? He was very fast. That's right. If you look here in verse 18, Asahel was swift-footed as one of the gazelles which is in the field. The King James Version says that he was as light of foot as a wild roe. So Asahel had a skill that he was very fast. And so he put his skills to work, and what he did was, is he pursued Abner and chased after him. And so when Abner saw Asahel running after him in pursuit, he questioned who he was, and he commanded Asahel to turn aside and to stop chasing him. In verse 20, Abner said, "Turn to your right or left and take hold of one of the young men for yourself, and take for yourself his spoil." Did Asahel stop chasing after him? No, he continued. So Abner again turned back and saw him running after him and said, "Turn aside from following me. Why should I strike you to the ground? How then could I lift up my face to your brother Joab?" Did Asahel listen to Abner the second time? No, keeps chasing him. And so in verse 23, it reads, "However, he refused to turn aside. Therefore, Abner struck him in the belly with the butt end of the spear so that the spear came out of his back. Or came out at his back. And there he fell and died on the spot. And it came about that all who came to the place where Asahel had fallen and died stood still." This event, this interesting event of Asahel chasing after Abner, Abner killing him with the butt end of his spear, really plays a great part into what happens in chapter 3. This specific instance leads to even more revenge. It leads into more bloodshed, even into curses, where David curses Joab eventually for what's going to happen because of this event and what ramifications come from it. In verses 24 through 32, we read that after Asahel was killed by Abner, Asahel's brothers, Joab and Abishai, went in pursuit of Abner. They sought revenge for the death of their brother. They came to the hill of Almah, and the sons of Benjamin were gathered as one band with Abner and stood on a certain hill. In verse 26, Abner called out to Joab and said, "Shall the sword devour forever? Do you not know that it will be bitter in the end? How long will you refrain from telling your people to turn back from following their brothers?" Asahel had been warned repeatedly by Abner to stop following him, and he continued. Now Joab and Abishai had come seeking vengeance. In verse 27, Joab replied to Abner and said, "As God lives, if you had not spoken, surely then the people would have gone away this morning, each from following his brother." So Joab then blows his trumpet, and the people halted and stopped their fighting. Abner and his men then traveled by night, and they left, and then Joab also returned from his pursuit. In verses 30 through 31, it reveals the losses from these battles between the men of David under Joab's direction, and the men of Ishbosheth under Abner's direction. How many men from David's servants were missing? How many casualties did they suffer? 19. That's not very many, right? How many did Abner suffer? 360. That's right. So David's servants clearly defeated Abner's men. The ratio was nearly 19 to 1. It's a pretty impressive victory. So Joab went with his men to bury his brother Asahel. They traveled by night back to Hebron. In 2 Samuel chapter 3, we read of the house of David growing stronger while the house of Saul grows weaker and weaker. We also see of this great transition of power. Ishbosheth himself doesn't seem to be that powerful of an individual, but who does he have on his side? Abner, Saul's commander, right? Well, Abner is going to be disgruntled obviously with Ishbosheth, and he defects to David. And also we read of Joab taking revenge, taking vengeance into his own hands for the death of his brother Asiel. All right. I'm going to pause right there. We'll start in chapter 3 on Wednesday night. Thank you all for your attention. We'll be looking at chapters 3, 4, and we might get into chapter 5 and 6. That would be the goal.